Good morning. This is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for March 13th. We'll start today's reading with an article entitled Pork Pulled Apart. This article is out of Danville, Regulating the Impact of Hog Farms by Brendan Dennison. Since the end of January, citizens from Western Vermilion County gathered at Village and Vermilion County Board meetings to inquire and comment on two proposed large hog farms north of Fithian. Their concerns include potential odor, air quality, and possible water pollution. The proposed facilities by Parks Shepherd and Parks Rademacher will each house up to 3,360 hogs. Vermilion County Board members passed a non-binding resolution in February in favor of the proposals. Vermilion County has no countywide zoning, so only state regulations will apply to the operations. The Illinois Department of Agriculture and Illinois Environmental Protection Agency both require large livestock operations to comply with a number of rules and regulations. Public concerns. Pat Livingston, a Fithian resident since the 1970s, asked, "Can you imagine the smell that will more than likely consume our little piece of paradise? Our town is going to be unbearable in the hot, humid days of summer. Our property value is going to tank." Todd Terry, a Fithian village trustee, echoed Livingston's concern regarding property tax value in public comments made at the February County Board meeting. He also said he was initially for the farms, became opposed once he knew the potential effects they could have on neighboring property taxes. Terry referenced a report found on factoryfarmtaxprotest.org, a 1999 study in Iowa that found proximity to a hog concentrated animal feeding operation, CAFO, decreased neighboring property values by 40% within 1/2 mile, 30% within 1 mile, 20% within 1.5 miles, and 10% within 2 miles. Proposal procedures. Hog farms such as the proposed park livestock operations are licensed by the state under the 1996 Illinois Livestock Facilities Management Act. According to a spokesperson with the Illinois Department of Agriculture, their department is charged with reviewing all documents relative to the proposed facilities, including the notice of intent to construct, facility design plans and specifications, transcripts and exhibits from the informational meetings, the county board recommendation, and all additional information received. Based on the review of the aforementioned information, the department will make its final determination regarding compliance with the act, the spokesperson said. If all requirements have been met in accordance with the Livestock Management Facilities Act, the application may then be approved. That ruling is expected to be issued 90 days after the notice of intent to construct is filed, or by March 30th for the park's facilities. The IDA may instead request additional information from the operators by that date. Once constructed, the IDA does not collect information regarding community and neighbor relations between hog farm operators after a proposal has been approved. Any issues regarding air quality complaint or manure storage leakage are then handled by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. An IEPA spokesperson said citizens in Vermilion County with air quality concerns related to livestock management and manure handling facilities can contact the regional office in Champaign. According to the document, What to Expect from an Illinois EPA Livestock Facility Inspection, field agents are authorized by state law to inspect for and investigate possible violations of the Illinois Environmental Protection Act. The Champaign IEPA office can be reached at 258-5800. Odor control. Richard Gates has been a professor with the Agricultural and Biological Engineering Department at the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences since 2008, and previously taught at the University of Kentucky for 25 years. Gates, a Minnesota native, who received his master's and doctorate at Cornell University, also runs the Certified Livestock Manager Program and the Custom Manure Applicator Training Program at the university. According to Gates, livestock operations may utilize one of the three following ventilation systems: natural, mechanical, or hybrid. He said natural systems use curtains that open with changes in air temperature and pressure, and mechanical systems will use a number of fans. Both depend on geographic setbacks to let odors naturally disperse into the air, according to Gates. According to design plans submitted to the IDA, both of the park's facilities will utilize mechanical ventilation systems. Traffic impact. According to transcripts of public informational meetings conducted by the IDA in February, each facility will bring in about 4.5 trucks a week, hauling in feed or trucking hogs in and out of the farms. Halstead said at those meetings, trucks will comply with the same seasonal posted road weight limit. Park's Rodemaker will use both Illinois Route 49 and 2000 North Road, and Park's Shepherd will use 1900 North Road and Route 49. Jake Nims, with Frank and West, said at the meetings there's a weekly average of 350 vehicles using 2000 North Road, according to Illinois Department of Transportation traffic maps, and 1900 North Road has the same amount of weekly traffic. Larry Hayes, Oakwood Township Road Commissioner, said the figure of 350 vehicles a week was way too high. Hayes said there are few houses on those county roads which sees all lightweight vehicle traffic, except for the occasional garbage truck or propane tanker. Those roads are subject to light vehicle loads, he said. Hayes added he was sure the increased truck traffic, will further tear up both county roads. Manure management. According to Art Halstead, operations manager for Parks Livestock, the proposed facilities will utilize a deep pit for manure storage designed by Frank and West Environmental Engineers, based out of Springfield. The collected manure will then be collected, then pumped 5 to 8 inches underground into nearby farm fields. Halstead said, and each facility will produce enough fertilizer for about 500 acres to be used after crops have been harvested. Halstead added most of the manure will be applied to farmland within a few miles of both sites, since transporting the manure can be costly. He added farmers also prefer organic fertilizer for its additional benefits compared to chemical fertilizer. Basically, we're building a fertilizer factory for farmers, he said. The application of manure as fertilizer on farmland is a very much regulated process, one that some farmers say is more stringent than the use of chemical fertilizer. According to Gates, the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency has just promulgated a new set of rules on concentrated animal feeding facility operations, or CAFOs. The U of I's Gates said he considered modern methods for manure application to be a science-based approach that they really promote and is the best methodology after all these years of modern agricultural production. We're very cognizant of environmental concerns. We have extension programs, training, and regulations all designed around the idea our environment is in need of protection, but also these guys can afford to provide food for us. Our next article is entitled County Board Weighs Hog Farm Resolution by Brendan Dennison. This article is out of Danville. A resolution approving two proposed large confined feeding hog operations near Fithian passed the Vermilion County Board with a 17-8 vote in February. The proposed facilities by Parks Shepherd and Parks Rodemaker will each house up to 3,360 hogs. The non-binding recommendation, bound for the Illinois Department of Agriculture, IDA, as required by the Illinois Livestock Management Facilities Act, included the following: the county does not have the independent means of measuring compliance with the various standards listed and must ask the IDA to carefully measure compliance. County officials asked the IDA carefully weigh public comments made and assure residents compliance will be met. The resolution also stated that going beyond state law by voting for or against such facilities would give false impressions or an illusion that the vote was some way binding. Ferrand Butler of District 8 voted against the resolution. "For me, I can't see how we can say there's no evidence provided that the proposed facility does not comply because we do not have the means of doing that," she said at the meeting. "I think it should say there was no evidence provided that the proposed facilities does or does not comply with the criteria." Steve Forez of District 3 supported the resolution. He said members need to remember whether the proposals meet the requirements of the statute. "If it doesn't, the Department of Ag will stop it," he said. "This isn't a referendum on livestock facilities. If we make it into one, in my view, that borders on overstepping our role in this process as it's laid out by statute." He added that based on the information he reviewed, he didn't see anything that didn't comply with the site rules laid out by statute. Kevin Green of District 2 also supported the resolution. Green said, "As I read through this, I agree with Steve in that the state is asking us, are any laws being broken? I studied this up and down. I talked to road commissioners, engineers, people at the university, state environmental organizations, pork producers, farm bureaus, you name it. I've talked to them," Green said. "Nobody has shown me where in the law they're breaking the law, or if they are, what statutes they're breaking." Green added he appreciated the community's input on environmental concerns. Of the 22 who gave public comment at the meeting, he said 16 were his friends and neighbors. A.J. Wright of District 7 voted against the resolution and said it was hard for him to believe the county has no jurisdiction over the proposed facilities. He added, "We had something to do with the wind farms. How can we possibly have nothing to do with something this major coming in with this many health issues? Vermilion County does not have a countywide zoning ordinance." In a telephone interview, Board Chairman Mike Marin doubted implementing county zoning would add local control over such facilities. "It's my understanding the Livestock Facilities Management Act supersedes county zoning," Marin said. "And if we did have county zoning, that land would be zoned for agricultural use." Point 3 of the Livestock Facilities Management Act site criteria states whether the location minimizes any incompatibility with the surrounding area's character by being located in any area zoned for agriculture where the county has zoning or where the county is not zoned, the setback requirements established by this act are complied with. In some of the counties surrounding Vermilion that do have county zoning, officials said their local ordinances don't affect how hog farms are approved. Matt Rock, Ford County Zoning Enforcing Officer, said as long as the proposal meets traditional zoning requirements, the petitioner would be issued a building permit. The zoning ordinance states a swine confinement facility falls under the standard Agriculture 1 zoning definition. Robert Uergler, Iroquois County Planning and Zoning Administrator, said his county doesn't have many hog farms, aside from a couple of larger complexes. He said some local residents voiced their concerns about a new hog facility proposed a few years ago. Uergler added the county board listened to them and decided to hand off the decision to the Illinois Department of Agriculture, as long as the state setbacks and environmental rules are met. Since then, he said, his office has been quiet. There hasn't been anyone who complained to this office by phone or mail of the smell, setbacks, or anything like that, he said. The next article is entitled Swine Producers Vow to Keep Community Relations by Brendan Dennison out of Danville. Speaking during February's Vermilion County Board meeting, Parks Livestock Operations Manager Art Halstead said founder Lawrence Parks and his family have deep roots in the Oakwood area. He added the proposed confined feeding hog farms of more than 3,000 animals each will meet numerous regulations under the Illinois Livestock Facilities Management Act and will inject the manure into farms as fertilizer between crop yields, a method that minimizes contact with manure with the air and binds its chemical contents with the soil. Lawrence takes this responsibility very seriously because of his reputation with the family business, and his future children who take the business over will depend on it, Halstead said during the meeting. He also said he believes the regulations will suffice in controlling odor problems. Marcia Moore, another hog farmer who spoke at the meeting, said she lives just 200 feet from her farm and doesn't have an odor problem. For everyone here who has a concern today, thank you, because sometimes we need to hear it. We need to hear your voices, Moore added, because the best way we can address your concerns is meetings like this, so we can find out what they actually are. Nick Anderson, spokesman for the Illinois Livestock Development Group, an agricultural advocacy organization, said the goal for livestock operators was to manage their practices so it's not an impact on a day-to-day basis. He added that they do say odor issues are not always completely eliminated, but they do address them. The way we address odor issues in the future is to know about them and try to address them. How they are addressed depends on the distance between the homes, ensuring correct practices are implemented on hog or crop farms, and maintaining avenues of communication with area residents, according to Anderson. At the public informational meetings, one person was concerned of high winds near Fithian, spreading odor even further. Wind becomes our friend on hog farms. Anderson said high winds make odor less impactful because it reduces the concentration of dust particles when air mixes. Keeping the facility clean as possible during production times and using certain feed additives will also help with dust and odor issues, Anderson continued. Starts with the farm. Anderson said farmers will notify neighbors when they plan to apply fertilizer to the farmland. Farms have a call list, he said. However, there has to be some cooperation from neighbors to provide a good contact number and understand there are days they need to apply. He added the hog farms should have emergency contact lists at the farm. If we have issues, whether odors or emergency issues, we want to make sure everyone is informed. Although if someone is in the process of or threatening litigation, he said there may not be communication. He also points to opposition groups who aim to stop communications between residents and operators and exploit locals on their fear of the unknown, he said. Anderson also said they've received complaints at farms before they've even begin being filled with hogs. He said he's not surprised by public reaction and understands that fear and emotion can overwhelm folks. Halstead said they have a good relationship with neighbors of their facilities and they plan to host an open house once the Fithian sites are constructed where area residents can take down their name and number. He added they'll let neighboring houses know when they plan to pump manure out of storage and we're more than likely to bring pork products around to neighboring homes around the holidays. We'll be fairly familiar with these folks because we'll be operating in the neighborhoods they live, and so will the landowners as well, he said. Halstead said they've also adopted the practice of drag hosing manure, so the vehicles that haul manure tankers for fertilization will not tear up roads or litter them with clumps of mud and dirt. According to Halstead, the manure stores will be pumped and applied to farmland once a year around October, after crops have been harvested. The storage pits can hold up to 3 million gallons at each site, which he said will last 12 to 14 months of operation at the hog farms. Most of the manure will be applied to farmland within 1 or 2 miles. Halstead said because if it's not affordable to haul at long distances, he added 99% of manure produced at the Rahmacher Hark facilities will be applied to their farmland on site. When asked about potential health risks imposed by pathogens sourced from livestock operations, Halstead pointed to the state of Iowa. Sioux County is the number one producer of hogs in the state. Halstead also said that county has one of the highest life expectancy rates in Iowa. That is why there are setbacks, he said. There's a lot of thought that goes into state regulations. He also references several counties in Illinois that have high hog populations such as Effingham, Clay, Adams, and Hancock counties. If there were a lot of health concerns, we should have examples, Halstead said. There's always several counties that have a lot of hogs, and no one ever points to local examples of health problems. And now we'll take a break and turn to the obituaries. The first one is for Joanna Hill Mills, 84, of Danville. Died at 10:21 a.m. Thursday, March 9th, at Danville Care Center. Funeral services will be at noon Monday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Visitation 11 a.m. Monday at the funeral home. Harry Powell Jr. of Danville, 66, died at 4:55 a.m. Saturday, March 11th, at Veterans Affairs Ileana Health Care System, Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday at Trinity Lutheran Church, 824 East Main Street, Danville. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville. Burial will be at Lutheran Cemetery, Danville. Jackie Harold Sr. of Georgetown. Jackie W.H. Harrod Sr., 83, of Georgetown, died at 5:07 a.m. Friday, March 10, 2017, in Danville. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday at Sunset's Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, 200 East West Street, Georgetown. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 Monday at the funeral home. Martin Ray Compton, 33, of Danville, died Tuesday, February 28, 2017, at Presence United Medical Center in Danville. Services 4 p.m. Wednesday, March 15, 2017, at Vermilion Valley Vineyard Church, 3733 Poolside Drive, Danville. Cremation was entrusted to Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. Richard L. Stouter of Indianola, 71, passed away at 8:02 p.m. Friday, March 10, 2017, at the Decatur Memorial Hospital, Decatur. Funeral services, 10 a.m. Thursday, March 16, at St. Nicholas Antiochian Orthodox Church, 312 West Elm Street, Urbana. Martin Ray Marty Compton, 33, of Danville, passed away Tuesday, February 28, 2017, at Presence United Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Marty's life will take place at Vermilion Valley Vineyard Church, 3733 Poolside Drive, Danville, on Wednesday, March 15th at 4 p.m. Jack Harold Sr., 83, of Georgetown, passed away on Friday, March 10th, 2017, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, March 14th, 2017, at Sunset Houghton Leisure Funeral Home, Georgetown, with burial following at the Georgetown Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. Monday, March 13th, at the funeral home. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that memorial donations be made to either the Georgetown American Legion Post or the American Cancer Society. Susie L. Carr Lindquist, 87, of Vetersburg, Indiana, passed away at 7:35 a.m. Friday, March 10, 2017, at IU Arnett Hospital in Lafayette. Funeral services will be 2 p.m. Tuesday, March 14th, 2017, at Dickerson Funeral Home in Vetersburg. Visitation will begin at noon Tuesday and continue until the time of service. Burial will follow service at Rockfield Cemetery. Rosella Rose Delaurier, 80, of Danville, passed away at 11:17 p.m. on March 7th, 2017, at Mid-Michigan Medical Center in Midland, Michigan. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, March 14th, at Southside Church of the Nazarene, 1629 King Street, Tilton, Illinois. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. March 13th at the church in Tilton. And the last article is called Food Feedback, Danville Public Education. DHS students offered taste test for menu. 50 minutes before their lunch period on Friday, juniors in Mark Basie's U.S. history class at Danville High School sat down to a gourmet feast. Their menu? Small plates of lasagna, a breakfast burrito, mini cheese ravioli, pepper jack cheese enchiladas, pizzeria-style double cheese pizza, and teriyaki chicken and General Tso's chicken, both over fried rice. "This is going to be my lunch today," Kayla Liggett said, balancing two plates of food. The spread was put on by Danville School's food service director, Greg Lazell, and members of the high school's kitchen staff. They were actually conducting a taste test to help them determine what new entrees to add to the lunch menu. "When we talked to the students, they said, 'We'd like to see more variety,'" Lazell said. "We want to make that happen." Superintendent Alicia Geddes said adding more options to just one of the recommendations that's been made by high school students. Earlier this year, she and other officials initiated informal conversations with students to gauge how they feel about the school's environment in an effort to make it more student-friendly and give students more ownership in their education. Caitlin Meganson's English class even made a project out of it outlining their ideas for improvements in letters to the superintendent. Other suggestions included relaxing the dress code to include jeans and hoodies and going green. "They don't like the fact that we don't recycle," Geddes said. The Ownership and Education Committee is currently studying the dress code idea, and Geddes said officials will look into recycling options the next time the district goes out for garbage bin. Survey says, another suggestion, larger food portions. Unfortunately, Geddes said portion sizes are set by the USDA. However, she and Lazell said they are able and happy to add more variety to the menu. "There's definitely more options from vendors now," Lazell said, adding they all meet the USDA's healthier guidelines aimed at reducing fat, sugar, and salt. The guidelines were in flux for a while, so vendors were taking a wait-and-see approach before they put out more items. They're doing a much better job, especially with bread and bread products. Lazell set up the taste test with Meganson and Basie's classes on Friday. Next week, student advisory board members will get to sample even. In both classes, Lazell asked students to try all 7 entrees, then mark whether or not they liked them on a survey. "Be honest. If you like them, we'll implement them into next month's menu," said Lazell, who also encouraged students to jot down other suggestions. "What would you like to see on the menu or in the cafeteria?" he continued, adding the basement cafeteria will be getting a makeover with new tables and chairs next year. "We want to know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we can do better." "How about tilapia?" "Bring back the breaded chicken sandwich," said Liggett, who stopped eating it when the breaded patty was switched to an unbreaded version. "Looks kind of fake. We need salt on pretzels and salsa con queso," one person suggested. "I like salt, but the government doesn't like salt," Lazell said, shrugging his shoulders. "I'm a fish type of person," said Brielle Bullock. "I like my fish to taste like, you know, like when it's fresh out of the ocean. But some days it doesn't taste like that." "What if I put some type of unbreaded fish on the menu like tilapia?" Lazell asked, getting a nod of approval from Bullock. Lazell said students in the first taste testing suggested expanding beverage choices. 2 or 3 of them wanted strawberry milk. "That's already been ordered, and it will be here on Monday. They'll get to try it before they leave on spring break." Students said they appreciate having an open dialogue with Geddes and other administrators, and their ideas are being taken to heart. "It's nice to have a say in what we eat because we're the ones who have to eat it. I think it's the first step in greater things to come." This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for March 13th. Hope you have a great day.